Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
KFI AM 640, you're listening to the John and Ken Show on demand on the iHeartRadio app. This is in the New York Post. Signature Bank, which just went down the chute.
Yes.
The chairman, Scott Shea, recently had led a seminar for employees on gender-neutral pronouns like Z and her, spelled H-I-R. Z-E and H-I-R.
Hmm.
Employees were instructed for more than an hour on how to use the gender-neutral pronouns. An hour. And he did it alongside somebody with the Colin Lord Community Health Center. And this guy was named Finn Brigham, who is described as a genderqueer trans masculine person.
Ooh.
Wow. So that's what he was doing while
the bank was failing. They didn't have a risk manager.
No.
They didn't take a closer look at what they were invested in and how much it could all blow up. Yeah, it's
okay.
John and Ken Show on KFI. Oh, exciting news, John. I don't know if you're aware of this. The Moist Line returns Friday.
Mm.
It'll be the first time in 2 weeks.
I know.
Because we both were out last Friday.
I miss it.
1-877-MOIST-86. Fresh messages are always welcome. 1-877-664-7886. We're going to begin this hour by talking to Blake Trolley from KFI News. There was a press conference by the LA County DA, George Gascon, to announce charges against the operators of a care facility for dementia patients in the Fairfax District, something called Silverado Beverly Place, for what happened back in 2020 when the COVID-19 outbreak hit. And a number of residents and even one employee died because of the actions, they will say, of the facility's operators. Let's bring on Blake for more on this story.
Blake, yeah. Welcome. So what is Gascon saying that they did at Silverado?
So these charges were filed against, and I want to start by saying these were filed against Silverado Senior Living Management. The managers were hit with elderly endangerment, other violations. Silverado, I know this comes down to that location in the Fairfax district. But Silverado is a national chain of memory care centers based out of Irvine. They have locations in other parts of Southern California and across the country. Now, to get to this deadly outbreak, this outbreak happened back in March of 2020. It was one of the deadliest COVID-19 outbreaks at any assisted living facility in California. Investigators began looking into this when a nurse in LVN was reported dead. Prosecutors allege that in a financially motivated move, the care center admitted a patient from New York. The patient was admitted from another care center in New York, which was a COVID-19 hotspot at the time. According to officials, it was not only at the time of the admission of, in March of 2020, it wasn't only against the company's protocols to admit that new patient, but that patient was never tested for COVID-19, was never quarantined. So they brought this patient in, and as Gascon again pointed to, this patient went straight from the airport to the facility.
This particular resident began displaying COVID-19 symptoms the morning after arrival and tested positive for the virus that evening. After admitting and assisting the new resident, Ms. Ringel, the LBN, tested positive for COVID on March 25th of 2020 and died on April 20 of 2020. Ms. Ringel was 32 years old at the time. In addition to Ms. Bruna Ringel, 13 residents contracted COVID-19 and died. There were also more than 100 cases of COVID-19 amongst residents and staff.
So again, they're saying because of, you know, the company broke the their own protocols. Their protocols were put in place because they knew it was, you know, dangerous to transfer patients from these COVID-19 hotspots into their own company. They didn't follow that protocol. And then on top of not following that protocol, they, you know, again, didn't test this patient or quarantine this patient. And there were some questions today, guys, about just the unusualness of this.
I have a question. You may not be able to answer it. But, all right, they violated their protocol. They did something wrong. Does that automatically translate to a crime, though? I mean, a felony every time a hospital violates their own protocol? I just don't remember hospital personnel then being charged with major felonies.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I wanted to go to this, because there were some questions about this, including one for me on this. But, you know, there were some questions. Again, was this an unusual case? The way that they say that they're going to try this is kind of, you know, kind of company negligence, your general company negligence. But, you know, as far as the criminal charges that they're trying to get to stick, the main one here is elderly endangerment. They're saying you guys knew that this was a bad idea, that this was a it was dangerous to transport this patient from New York to California. You did anyways. On top of that, you didn't test this patient and you didn't quarantine them. So again, I think it is going to be a little bit of an unusual case. I mean, there were definitely questions about that. This is investigator Mark Barrett pushing back on that, because reporters were, you know, immediately that was kind of everybody's first question, is this case a little bit unusual given the circumstances?
I would not say it's an unusual prosecution, because we often have cases where there's negligence that causes harm to health and safety of others, dramatically in arson cases, industrial accidents, and we're treating this as an industrial workplace accident, which is one of the reasons the Department of Industrial Relations is investigating this case.
And then I want to go to this clip as well. This was my exchange with Mark Barrett. Again, he's an investigator with the DA's office. I had this question just to get an idea of how tricky this prosecution's going to be, because, I mean, guys, we're talking about people getting sick, but again, this is also during a pandemic when people were just getting sick in general.
Do you anticipate there any pushback? They could say, well, somebody else got sick, or another staff member brought COVID into the building.
We do not have to prove that COVID was brought in by this particular patient. We simply have to show that there was a positive test and that the protocols were not followed. In particular, this patient was never tested when they arrived at the facility, which was, you know, a breach of logic and also standards. And also, this patient was not quarantined per regulations for 14 days.
And you could hear their questions were getting cut off. So we didn't get to ask,
to that question. They don't have to prove that this patient brought the COVID that killed 13 others. Well, then what's the crime here? Yes, they didn't follow the procedure, but it seems at most that would be They could get fined by whatever agency oversees nursing homes, or there could be a civil lawsuit from the families.
There is a civil lawsuit already.
Right, there is a civil lawsuit, right, but it seems like that's as far as it goes. Now you're talking about a crime where you don't have to prove that the crime was committed. The crime here is they knowingly had a COVID patient who spread COVID and killed 13 other patients, but they don't know, and they're not going to try to prove that it was his COVID. That just sounds really like a stretch.
I think this is going to, it's definitely going to be an interesting case to watch. You know, when this case, if it does get to trial, it'll be really interesting to see how they try to prosecute this. And that's exactly why I asked that question, because I, you know, you immediately can at least for me as a common man, you know, you start to kind of set up that defense in your head. But I should point out, guys, that this facility has already been sued in civil court by three residents' families and the family of the nurse who died. The mother of the nurse who died did an interview with the LA Times saying her daughter didn't know what to do. She told her mom this man was profusely sweating, had a cough and a fever. The nurse actually called 911 the next day from his symptoms. And again, the day after he was admitted, he did test positive for COVID-19.
And also it was March of 2020, which was the Wild West period where nobody knew what was going on. I mean, that was only 2 weeks into the lockdown.
Yeah, and this guy, you know, out of all the places he was, you know, he could have came from, he was coming from New York City. And that's one thing prosecutors have pointed out is just the added danger of the fact that New York City at the time was an epicenter.
This was a very upscale. I see here more than 15 grand a month to be at this facility. It's considered a very upscale care facility. Thank you, Blake.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, it said here, I looked at a story from 3 years ago. 125 dementia patients. They offered gourmet meals, yacht trips, art shows, live entertainment, and the regular aroma of baking cookies. The price tag can run north of $15,000 a month to be at Silverado.
I'd rather give that money to my kids instead of living in dementia.
If you have dementia, you don't know. I mean, you smell a cookie and then you smell one.
That's where somebody's got to give me the exit bag. What's the point of that?
What you should open. You should open exit bag.
That's what I'm going to call my nursing home chain, the exit bag.
EBH.
No, really. I mean, $15,000 a month, right? If you're there for 2 years, I mean, that's over $300,000 to go to a bunch of greedy nursing home executive bastards. What's the point of that? Just take the exit bag. Give that money to your family.
And then they bring in a guy from New York and he kills 13 of them.
Yeah, right?
I guess, yeah, I bet you that's why they took him in, probably was going to pay a hefty price to get transferred, or his family
I was wondering what the financial gain was, like $15,000 a month. Oh, man.
Now, all right, more coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
Let's go.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
Coming up after 2:30, this is a can't miss, and it probably took a lot for the assignment editors at the El Segundo Times to actually send somebody to do a story, which is really a couple of weeks late, on what's going on in the metro system in Los Angeles County. This is unbelievable.
Yes.
It starts with a guy who's just sitting there smoking fentanyl on a metro train and doesn't care and then staggers off and almost falls down. We'll talk about it after the news at 2:30 because it's just more proof that there is nobody left on the buses and trains, but the homeless, the drug addicts, and of course, sometimes both homeless drug addicts.
And the insane.
Wandering around.
Wow. Exactly. This story, I mean, it's nothing that we didn't know, right? But there was just something about this story. It's like, you really, when you go on those metro trains, you're descending into hell.
Nobody is anymore unless they're homeless or addicted or both. It's clear from the story. That's all that's there.
Don't take metro trains, okay? I think every sane person should boycott the metro trains until they either go out of business or get rid of all the vagrants and drug addicts and mental patients.
Yeah. Now we're back to the Newsoms. The announcement was made today by the LA County DA's office that they will not seek a new trial against Harvey Weinstein. As you may remember, there were several accusers in the trial, but the jury only convicted Weinstein in the case of this Italian model at a hotel in L.A., Jane Doe number one. That's the 16 years behind bars that he got sentenced to. The other accusers include Jane Doe number four, who is Jennifer Newsom. Dippity-Doo's wife. The jury deadlocked on the case that she presented. And the word today is they are not going to retry Weinstein. Jane Doe number two is the other one they deadlocked on, identified as actress and screenwriter Lauren Young. Now, apparently, Young submitted a statement. Young was disappointed about the decision, but Jane Doe number four, Newsom, submitted a statement to the judge saying she did not want a retrial. And we've talked about this before because we're both of the opinion that when Jennifer Newsom encountered Weinstein, whatever happened, she was definitely seeing this as a step up in her acting career. That's what she wanted to be at the time this happened. I think it was in 2004 or 2005. And I think the jury, too, was a bit conflicted because she continued to maintain some type of contact with Weinstein, even after what she says was a sex assault.
She sent him emails. She asked for his advice after Gavin got a lot of bad publicity for having the affair with, campaign manager?
Top aide's wife. Yeah.
The wife, right. So, and then we found out that Newsom had drinking problems. All this came out in the media. And what does Jennifer Newsom do? Calls up Harvey Weinstein for some public relations advice, some crisis management wisdom. Wow, that's weird. Now, if she really freaked out on the stand. She was crying. She was very upset. I can't square that with somebody who privately is making phone calls for advice when her dopey husband's dirty past was coming out.
Oh, I've always believed that she took advantage of this because her nonprofit is all about women and the things that they suffer. Remember when the Me Too started, Weinstein was one of the first people to be accused. She didn't come forward with her story for a while.
No,
she did not. When she heard there's an actual trial, I think that the thought was, well, you know, I might be able to gain some publicity off this as an accuser.
And does this help Gavin's political career?
Yeah. Or does it help my nonprofit?
Yeah.
I'm going to stand up for women who have been assaulted.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of questions about her.
Both of the Newsoms are shady. They're definitely shady.
By the way, if you missed it last hour, that's another good reason to check out the podcast. We did a story on the Newsoms and the Silicon Valley Bank that collapsed. Apparently, the Newsoms' wineries were big depositors. And apparently, a Silicon Valley Bank executive was on the board of Jennifer Newsom's nonprofit.
And Newsom asked the Silicon Valley executives to donate $100,000 to one of his slush funds.
And people are wondering why he didn't make this clear when he was asking Biden and the federal government to help bail out SVB. He should have been more transparent about his connections to the bank. But again, it's blind trust. We don't know anything about it. It's blind trust. Also, that what's been revealed about the board of this bank, only one member of the board actually had a career in investment banking. The rest are being described as Obama and Clinton mega donors.
Yeah, this
is... And one of them apparently was so worked up when Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in 2016, she cried and she went to a Shinto shrine to pray because she was so upset about the victory by Trump over Hillary.
Their board, they like to brag, was so diverse. It had one black member, one LGBTQ plus member, two veterans, 45% women, but they only had one person on the board who had experience in the banking industry.
That's a joke. That is. That's what we said before. It seems like it was a place just for Silicon Valley Democrat donors.
One source told the Post everyone knew it was the go-to bank for woke CEOs. The companies SVB loaned money to all had a woke agenda.
Kate Mitchell, 64, served on the board since 2010. She told CNBC back in 2016 that she went to a Shinto shrine while on a trip to Japan to pray. I prayed for me and us to get beyond our grieving and shock and to figure out how to engage and listen to what happened and come back together. She had earlier celebrated how 97% of the tech industry's donations were going to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
And she also founded the National Venture Capitalist Association, an initiative called Venture Forward, which is focusing on advancing opportunities for women and underrepresented minorities in the venture ecosystem. Oh, my God. They one of the just other members choke on all this woke jargon, don't they?
Yeah, one of the other members of the board, Elizabeth Busy Burr, was an improv actor. That was her experience. I learned a lot doing improv, and it's influenced how I think about leadership.
Yeah.
So they put her on the board of this bank.
How did that help you with risk assessment? Shouldn't the board be reviewing every month or every quarter where the assets are located and what the consequences are if you're overloading assets in bonds whose value is dropping dramatically? Did they have that discussion?
When we come back, we'll talk about this story from the El Segundo Times about the drugs, crime, death on LA's metro system. John and Ken, KFI AM 640 live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
We're live on the radio from 1 until 4, and the podcast happens after 4 on the iHeartRadio app. It's John and Ken on demand. So anything you miss, you can hear. Anytime you want, all day and night.
On the bowl, in the shower.
You know, you can hear it a day later, 2 days later.
No. During sex, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't the listener say they did that with you when you were on the radio years ago, that they would have sex to your voice?
Yes, in the morning.
In the morning, right.
And they would wake up, and apparently if they were feeling frisky, I'd be on in the background while they were grunting and heaving or whatever it is they were doing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to think about it.
The El Segundo Times finally got around to doing an in-depth story we brought you weeks ago from other media sources that Metro's really in a tailspin. The Metro system in Los Angeles County would include the subways and the buses, and ridership is disastrous. They had thought as the pandemic eased, people would come back. But what really happened during the pandemic is the homeless drug addicts doubled down on getting on the subways and buses. And we learned that this year alone, which is only a couple of months old, they already have more overdose deaths on the Metro system than they had all of last year. So the story by Rachel Uranga starts this way. Matthew Morales boarded the Metro Red Line at MacArthur Park as classical music blared over the station's loudspeakers. I'll take a moment to tell you that that's one of their plans. They've been blasting classical music to try to drive away people from loitering.
Why would that work?
7-Elevens do that. Sometimes they play really heavy metal or they play something
heavy
really...
metal. I could see classical music is not going to drive drug addicts away. That's stupid.
It was rush hour on a Tuesday afternoon, and Morales made his way to a back corner seat, unfolded a tiny piece of foil with several blue shards of fentanyl. As the train started west, he heated the aluminum with a lighter. He sucked in the smoke through a pipe fashioned from a ballpoint pen. Doors opened and closed. A few passengers filed in and out. A grain of the opioid fell to the floor. He concentrated on trying to pick it up, then lost track as his body went limp. His shoulders slumped, and he slowly keeled forward.
Welcome to the red
line. By the time the train arrived at the Wilshire Western Station, he was doubled over and nearly motionless with his hand on the floor. And I want to take a moment to say this. For the Times to do this story, because all they do is promote people to take these dopey trains and buses.
Right.
For them to do this story is kind of a big step, because someone must have said, oh, my God, this will not reflect well on getting people to ride the trains and buses.
They are constantly lecturing in all their news stories and columns that because of climate change that we must all transition towards public transportation. No, you will get killed or you'll watch people die. No, I don't care how hot the planet gets. I'm not doing that.
Even the dopey writer yesterday, who was that, Sammy Roth?
Yeah.
Who drives around, too, even though he's worried about the climate. He still drives around, too. He's not getting on these buses and trains. And then, of course, his article or his opinion column was basically about how white Westsiders are polluting the air for people of color neighborhoods. It's ridiculous.
We have people snorting fentanyl until they pass out, and he's worried that we're all racist for driving our cars on freeways. I mean, the Times is filled with lunatic writers. It never was like this.
You sure they're not on the board of SVB? Same kind of people.
It is a brain infection. The woke virus is destroying everybody's brains. Nothing is functioning. This newspaper doesn't function. The banks aren't functioning. I don't know what the hell is going on. Everybody's obsessed with nonsense that I don't even understand half the nonsense they talk about.
Well, here's the number. Since January, 22 people have died on Metro buses and trains, mostly from suspected overdoses. That's more people than all of what happened in 2022. Serious crimes are up 24% compared with the previous year. They talked to a train operator who said as he drove the Red Line subway, he saw a man masturbating in his seat, and he calls other people sleepers, people who get high and nod off on the train. Quote, "We don't see any business people anymore. We don't see anybody going to Universal. It's just people who have no other choice than to ride the system, homeless people, drug users."
Yeah, can you imagine taking your kids on a train ride to Universal? And sitting next to one guy who's masturbating, another guy is snorting fentanyl, third guy's passed out on the floor, fourth guy has a knife sticking out of his gut. I mean,
when we had the radio station situated in Koreatown, they just opened. I think it was the Red Line.
Yeah, I remember
the MacArthur Park Westlake station. I think we took that to Langer's Deli one day.
Yeah.
Apparently, in this story, that is the worst of the worst. The station sits next to an open-air drug market. About 22,000 people board the trains here daily, but apparently this is the worst. 26 medical emergencies at the station between November and January. Most of them drug overdoses.
How can there be such a thing as an open-air drug market? How can that exist even for a day, for an hour?
Ah, well, where we go. Allison Vu, a spokesperson for ACT LA, a social justice advocacy coalition. Oh, these people need to go away. What is harassment and jailing people going to do if to use drugs to address the drug use rates? See, what these people want, John, they want the injection sites. They want the injection sites. They think the homeless will go there, inject themselves safely, and then we stand by with Narcan to revive them.
They tried that in San Francisco, and San Francisco closed it in just a year. They ended up with something like 17,000 people showing up.
Well, what they wanted to do in San Francisco is give open-air injection sites and then get the people, coax them into drug treatment, and they got, like, nobody to do it.
They had, like, 10,
that's why they closed it.
They had thousands
and thousands. It wasn't worth the money because they weren't getting anybody into drug treatment.
Well, yeah. I mean, does this silly lady want to pay for this? They don't go to drug treatment. They don't want to get off the drugs. And we're going to spend our tax money on this nonsense? Even in San Francisco, they couldn't do it. The mayor had to blow the whistle on it.
We're dealing with opposition, and we've seen this with the homeless and now with the drug use and the crime, that doesn't want any enforcement action on anything.
Tell me, why?
No enforcement of any kind.
Why can't Karen Bass just tell them to get the F out of the office?
Oh, because she sympathizes with them. She understands.
Does. Well, you know what? She's got to be smoked out because she's on the Metro board and she's the mayor. And all the taxpaying citizens cannot use a Metro train or a Metro bus because all these bums, the unhoused, their bodies are laying all over the place. This guy's masturbating. This guy's dumping his feces. This guy's urinating.
Well, they do say in the story they arrested people on the Red Line last year, 50 of them. But Prop 47, there's no consequences.
Yes.
In California, most charges are misdemeanors or considered lower level offenses, and that's it. So
we've
Prop 47 also defeats this enforcement idea.
And we've tried that law now for over 8 years, and this is what it produced. We now have a multi-billion-dollar transit system that no decent person can use. This is what we got for billions and billions in tax money and this stupid, stupid Prop 47 law. Now,
so what's the compromise? The compromise is they're putting ambassadors on these trains and subways. Unarmed people that walk around and gently nudge you if you're smoking fentanyl not do that?
Until the first ambassador gets knifed. Which is going to happen.
I'm afraid that is a very possible outcome.
Yeah, it's going to happen because you have hundreds of these crazy people. And if the ambassador, either that or they're going to be completely ineffective and they're just going to sit there like potted plants.
All right, we got more coming up. After 3 o'clock, we'll check in with Steve Gregory, KFI News, who did cover Biden's visit to Monterey Park. We'll see how exciting that was. John and Ken, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere. The iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
Well, we'll talk to Steve Gregory, that guy in KFI News. You're familiar with him. He was covering Joe Biden's visit to Monterey Park, which occurred this afternoon, part of a swing from San Diego to L.A. and then over to Las Vegas, mostly, I think, to raise money. But supposedly, he's got an executive order on guns, and we'll talk about that with Steve and see what he found out. And maybe Biden slipped while going down the stairs. We don't know anything might have happened to him.
I think so, he has had two more stumbles recently going up the stairs.
I did see
video,
and I'm never sure whether or not that's new or old. Or
no, there were two new ones. He's 80. He can't go up the stairs anymore.
But I pointed out what I always point out with this. He tries to go too fast because he wants to show everybody he's vigorous. Mm-hmm. So he slips because, he's 80 and he's going too fast. I saw him. He was like really quick stepping up the steps and it was a little stumble.
He's going to take a header.
Also next hour. Tomorrow, we understand it is very possible that the U.S. Senate will vote on Garcetti as to whether or not he's the next ambassador to India. A compelling statement was released today by Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa against Garcetti in this nomination. We'll bring you all that, and plus another media outlet did a story on Garcetti's perhaps connections to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know, but it's full of detail in his connections to some
he clearly
prominent
has connections.
Figures. Yeah.
How did nobody know this for the 9.5 years he was in office?
We do business with China, too, so it's part of that.
Yeah, but this is dirty stuff.
All right. Well, maybe you should run to Washington with that. As they're voting on the Senate floor, waive the article.
He's
a communist. The El Segundo Times did another story today. This one quite different than the last one about all the drug use and homeless on the metro system. This is about people driving in their cars and using their cell phones. The old topic of distracted driving. Mm-hmm. And of course, it begins with highway fatalities being on the rise in the U.S. 46,000 in 2022. And again, I look at that number and I say, how many hundreds of millions of drivers are there and how many trips are there? I hate to say this, but I don't get shocked by that number.
How many billions of miles do people drive?
Yeah, I think on a percentage basis, that's actually kind of low.
Yeah,
but because it was up 22%, now we have to panic. And how many of these deaths involve distracted driving? Now, in this story by Russ Mitchell, a staff writer with the El Segundo Times, they admit later on, it's hard to say. Because when you have an accident, especially if it's a tragedy, you can tell that somebody's drunk, right? Obviously by testing them, and maybe it's that somebody's high, or that somebody's driving too fast because there's data. But how do you know if somebody was playing around on the cell phone and was under the category of distracted driving? They talked to a guy who's part of the National Distracted Driving Coalition, John. Did you join that once? Distracted Driving Coalition.
Yeah. Wait, if I did,
his
what would I
do? Bruce Landsberg.
Well, he's got to be a lot of fun. What little kid dreams of joining the National Distracted Driving Coalition when they grow up?
I don't know. So they cite a 2022 survey of people's habits behind the wheel concerning the cell phone. Travelers Insurance Company. 77% say they use the phone while driving. Well, I mean, I do, but it's hands-free. I just have the Bluetooth, right? So
That's minimal distraction.
Yeah, so that takes away some of that number, right? I guess. 74% use cell phone maps. Don't we usually try to get around?
Well,
and a lot of people put the phone on a stand right next to the steering wheel so you don't have to look
and
far.
Before cell phone maps, you had paper maps. Or you had directions that you scrawled down on a little slip of paper.
Yeah.
So there's always been something like that.
The next three, though, are a little more troubling. 56% do read a text or they email somebody. That can be a little harrowing because you have to start typing with your fingers or unless you have the voice command one.
That goes on. That's one of my little things to entertain myself.
Watching people text.
If I'm trying to make a turn onto a road, I just watch the cars go by. And watching people who are actively looking at their phone, and you could see them scrolling while they're driving about 30 miles an hour down one of the boulevards.
I'm guilty of, last week, I did want to fire off a quick text to someone, and I was behind the wheel. I was driving. I said, "Oh, I just want to answer yes because they want to know now." I was like, "I'm trying to type yes while I'm driving."
Why don't you type "I'm about to die"? Then they could know the exact moment you hit the tree.
27%. This is a good one. Updated or check social media. Yeah, that's important while you're driving. What's going on with my Facebook?
But you know, shouldn't those people be weeded out?
They should.
Yeah.
If those people get into a crash, that's Darwinism.
Yeah, that's right. No.
My favorite, 19%. 19% shopped online while driving. And I thought of Deborah Mark. I just thought that's something she might do.
Shopped for what? Yeah, we should save this.
Her new leopard outfit or something. Or vegan boots. I don't know.
A leopard steering wheel cover.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds perfect for her. Especially with her convertible. Be prominent while she drives. A leopard steering wheel cover.
She's probably guilty of all three of those. Email, social media.
I mean, it's more complicated to do online shopping. I mean, it's one thing to check your Facebook or send out a text, but to sit there and actually click through items you might buy while you're driving, that's...
I can't do it. A couple of times I tried to order some food because...
While I was driving, forget it. Why don't you just call the number and do it the old-fashioned way? Use your Bluetooth and just order it while you're driving.
That's what I do. Although, like, there's one burger place that doesn't take calls anymore.
I expected that was going to happen.
Yeah, we only take online orders.
Yeah, everything's online because that way it's very clear. They can see what you ordered exactly, and they don't have to worry about the distortion on the phone line.
I even complained to the clerk at the burger shop. It's like, I can't order online when I'm driving.
And they
just looked at me. They had a blank look on their face.
All right, when we return, we'll talk to Steve Gregory, KFI News, about Biden's visit to Monterey Park. John and Ken, KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app.
In for Deborah Mark, who's probably out shopping. Mark Reiner, live in the 24-hour KFI Newsroom.
Hey, you've been listening to the John and Ken Show. You can always hear us live on KFI AM 640, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, and, of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.